Well, Mark's Gospel, chapter 4, and the first 20 verses. Ears that hear, ears that don't. Ears that hear, and ears that don't. The parable of the sower, as recorded in Mark's Gospel, as you perhaps remember, and preachers maybe remind, because we're looking at it section by section, this probably doesn't come through as it should, but Mark's Gospel is characterized by action, by quick, rapid movement, really. There's lots of miracles, there's lots of things happening. It's quick, rapid. The word immediately occurs time and time and time again in Mark's Gospel, often translated at once, straight away. There's movement, things are happening all the time. One author says there is never a dull moment in reading Mark. The story moves on from one interesting highlight to another. Another commentator describes it as a fast-moving, straightforward series of action shots. There's no time to be bored. You know, if you're on holiday with little ones or big ones, they might say, "Oh, I'm bored." There's no time to be bored. It's moving from one story to another, action. There's always something happening in, and we remember that Mark uses the historic present tense, which is he's telling a story, like if you were telling a story to a child about the big bad wolf, you wouldn't say, "And the wolf crept up and jumped out and gobbled him up." You'd use the present tense, and you say, "And the wolf creeps up and jumps out and gobbles," and you'd frighten the little one too. But you make it more interesting by using the present tense. And that's what Mark does. He uses the present tense, the historic present tense. Another commentator says Mark is not a trained man of letters. In other words, he wouldn't pass any English, any grammatical examinations. He's not a man of letters. He often writes clumsily, inelegantly, and ungrammatically. But he tells a story well. He tells a good story. The words might come out clumsily and all wrong in that sense, but it's a good story that he tells, a good story. That's why often new converts are given the Gospel of Mark to read, because he's telling a good story. And Mark also does something that we were told, when we were at school, we were told never begin a sentence with the word "and." I don't know if you were told that, were you? Yes, you were. Never. And Mark does it. "And this, and then that, and then this, and then that." And it's not just the odd set, it's almost every sentence he starts with the word "and." He's not grammatically correct, but he tells a good story. It's the shortest gospel. It's the one that has most action in it, most miracles take place. And in contrast to the most miracles, there's the least parables. The parables are the times when Jesus is teaching. So there is teaching in it, but there's the least teaching in Mark's Gospel. It's more action, it's more movement, it's more not in the classroom, it's more out there on the job, if you like. It's more practical, it's things are happening. And in fact, someone has worked out there are 19 miracles in Mark, but only 4 parables. 19 miracles, but only 4 parables. And guess what? Of those 4 parables, we're looking at 1 today and 3 next week. So I've been given the teaching bit rather than the miracle bits. I say one author says there are only 4 parables. It just depends what your definition of a parable is. Now, I don't think you can beat the definition of a parable that we had at Sunday school, an earthly story with a heavenly meaning. And using that as the definition, there are only 4 parables. The parable of the sower, which we're looking at today, and then next week, the parable of the lamp on a stand, the parable of the growing seed, and the parable of the small mustard seed. I bet you're excited already, aren't you, for next week? But there we are. I know Linda's going on holiday, but there we are, there we are. An earthly story. An earthly story with a heavenly meaning. But it says in verse 2 of Mark's Gospel, chapter 4. He taught many things by parables. It's only that Mark records just a few parables. But Jesus always used parables. He always used earthly stories and gave them a heavenly meaning. And so the story of the sower, which incidentally is found in Luke's Gospel, chapter 8, and in Matthew's Gospel, chapter 13. It's a well-documented story, the parable of the sower. We find in verse 1, Jesus is wanting to teach. He's wanting to instruct his followers, but such a large crowd has gathered, is there by the lakeside, that he has to get into a boat and just drift out a little bit into the lake, so that from the he could use the boat as his pulpit, and he can preach to the people on the shore. That's made a lovely pulpit, didn't it? Again, Jesus began to teach by the lake. The crowd, verse 1, that gathered round him was so large that he got into a boat, and he sat in it out on the lake, while all the people were along the shore at the water's edge. That's Jesus in his boat, and there we are. He made an improvised pulpit, if you like, and if you want a little lesson in church history, there is time. He's not the first person to make an improvised pulpit. John Wesley was an Anglican vicar who got kicked out of church, really, because he preached the gospel, because he got converted. And his preaching license was revoked, was taken away from him. And so we often see pictures of John Wesley in a churchyard, stood on a tombstone preaching. Then he got kicked out of the churchyard. So he went out preaching in the fields and in the country. Field preaching, it was called. And he would go out and preach open air ministry. He'd preach in an open-air ministry, or beach ministry, as often happens, or used to happen. I don't know if it still does down at Westwood Ho. Just a few years ago, we had the beach mission come, didn't we? And seaside open-air meetings are completely different to preaching in a church, or from a pulpit, if you like. You see, in church, we can say things like Leviticus chapter 12 verse 1. And in the main we'll know, yeah, there's an Old Testament book called Leviticus chapter 12 and verse, I just said that as random. I hope it's a nice verse if anybody, but you know, we just look it up and we say, oh yeah. And as Jackie said, we remember the story of Eli and we say, oh yeah, it might be a vague memory, but yeah, he was the priest, wasn't he? In the story of Samuel, the calling of Samuel in the temple. Yeah, but out there, you're on their territory. And it's different when you're preaching in the open air. And you can't quote the Bible in that sense. You have to be... And Jesus was doing open-air preaching, really. He was preaching in the... He was on their ground, really, on their territory. And Jesus... Because he was on there, he literally, there he was, and he wanted to illustrate. He wanted to get on their level, and that's what we do. When we're at work or trying to witness, even at home, if our partner is not with us in Christian things, we have to try and illustrate. It's tough, isn't it? And we have to find something, a parable, if you like, something that will... And we'll talk about the weather, won't we? And we'll start a conversation, say, it's hot today. And if you're brave, you'll say it's even hotter in hell for those who reject Christ. You know, you can... We'll talk about the football, won't we? I don't know, some of us will. We'll say those flipping Germans, they scored in the last minute, didn't they? And they're flipping... And then we'll say, but you know... They scored in the last minute, and you can be saved in the last minute of your life. You can ask the Lord, you know, in the last minute, all is not lost. While there's life, there's hope, but you don't know when that last minute is come. You don't know if you're going to get run over. by a bus or something, you know, you just don't know. So do it now. Sorry, Anne, about the flipping Germans, but at least I'm honest. At least... Or Brexit, you know, all these sort of things, and we can bring it in about, and that's what we have to do in open air ministry when we're on. And this is literally what Jesus did. He was on their ground, and he looked out, and as he was preaching, he's from the boat looking inland, and he saw a farmer sowing his seed. That's what it says. He saw a farmer scattering his seed. And he said, I want to tell you, see that farmer up there? I want to tell you a story about him. I want to tell you a parable. I want to illustrate using that man. See what he's doing there? He's going out and he's scattering his seed. Listen, he says, verse 3, I want to tell you a story. He didn't begin by saying, oh, as it says in Psalm 23, there's a shepherd on that other hill. No. He didn't quote the Bible. They wouldn't have understood what the Old Testament script, what their scriptures were. He was on their territory. So he began talking about what they could see, what they could identify with. And he says in verse 3, I said, a farmer went out. Listen, he says, a farmer went out to sow his seed. Listen. This story is going to require attention. He says again in verse 8, he who has ears to hear, listen to this. You need spirit, you need to understand what I'm saying. Note well. And then he tells the parable. He went out to sow his seed, and as he sowed the seed, some of the seed fell on the path, and the birds came and took it away. And some fell among the rocks, a little thin layer of, and it began to grow, but when the sun came up, it had no depth of root, and so that died. Some fell in the weeds, and the weeds overtook the, and some fell on good soil, and boy, that grew, and they were able to sing Harvest Home. They had a good harvest. Well, I guess to some people, what's the point of the story? That's all it was, an earthly story, a lesson in agriculture. Yeah, to some people listening that day, it would have been, yeah, some seed's gone on the, don't put your seed on the path, don't put your seed there on the rock, don't put your seed in the weeds, put it on good soil. Yeah, that's a good lesson on farming, Monty Don, you know. That's a good story. Some seed, verse 4, he says, as he was scattering the seed, some fell on the path, and the birds came and ate it up. Now, you don't need me to explain. You've seen it. People would broadcast their seed. They would have a little bag of seed, and they would throw, and they would scatter the seed. And Jesus pointed to that farmer and he said, you see that farmer sowing his seed? Some of that seed is going to be stolen by the bird, or squashed, if you like, as well. The birds were following him. It was a ready meal for them. You've seen the farmers today ploughing the fields, and there's always seagulls behind, isn't there? After the worms, after the soil. And these seagulls, these birds, weren't daft in Jesus' day, and they knew he was a free meal for them, because the seed was scattered and broadcast. And so they went and ate up the seed. And others fell on the path, and people trod on the path, and it got squashed. So it was stolen or squashed. The second lot of seed, verses 5 and 6, was scorched, if you like. Verses 5 and 6, it says this. Some fell on rocky places where it didn't have much soil. It sprang up quickly because the soil was shallow, but when the sun came up, the plants were scorched and they withered because they had no root. It fell on rocky ground. Thin layer of soil, and then solid, not much depth, solid rock, not much depth to it. That's why farmers and gardeners try and dig down quite as much as they can. They would dig down at the depth of the spade at least, or even two depths, they're called spits, that's why I hesitated, two spit depths. They would dig down, they would work the soil so that when the seed grows, the roots would be able to. But these roots weren't, Jesus said. He said the soil is rocky. And so in the story that I'm telling, in the parable that I'm telling, the seed just goes, but when it hits the rock, it just dries up because the sun, there's no moisture. It's the starved and scorched seed. Some seed is strangled, it says in verse 7. He said, other seed fell among the thorns, which grew up and choked the plants, so that they didn't bear grain. This seed grew, but so did the weeds. I don't know if we've got many gardeners here. I guess we've all had a little dabble at gardening, and I used to have an allotment, and a load of school children, I tell you, the allotment holders, a load of school children. In fact, I had my allotment for 30 years, didn't I? And the squabbles, these old grown men, oh, you've set a bonfire, it's scorching my rhubarb, and no. But anyway, and when you talk to these, and they say, oh, he said, my runner bean's not doing very well. Oh, the peas, hope, marrows, but weeds, wow. You always get a good crop of weeds. And that's what Jesus was saying. He was saying, well, you know, he's trying, but the weeds grew, and the thorns grew, and they strangled wheat and tares together sown unto joy or sorrow grown. But then verse 8, there was the successful seed. Other seed fell on good soil. It came up, it grew and produced a crop, multiplying 30, 60, even 100-fold. It grew, it produced a crop. The yield varied, 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold. But it grew, it was successful. Now on a human level, that was an earthly, that's the story. That's the story that Jesus told. It's an earthly story. But he says, Jesus says, verse 9, he who has ears to hear, let him hear, let him perceive, let him understand the meaning of that story, the meaning of why I'm telling you to consider the farmer and the different types of responses. Put your spiritual eyes to see, open our eyes, your spiritual ears, that I may hear and understand, not the earthly meaning, but the heavenly meaning of this parable. So Jesus explained it to his disciples, and he said in verse 14 of this explanation, he said, the farmer sows the word. He said, I'm not really talking about agriculture. I'm not giving you a lesson in how to plant. I'm giving you a lesson in how to sow the word, in evangelism, how to preach that, how to share the gospel, how to tell others about salvation, if you like. I'm talking about preaching the word, about witnessing. The farmer sows the word. So here we are, even in church today, and verse 15, what does he say? The farmer sows the word. Some people who hear the word are like the seed among the path where the word is sown. As soon as they hear it, Satan comes and takes away the word that was sown to them. So he said, here's the story. Here's the relevance. Here's the heavenly meaning. He said, there'll be people who'll be listening to the word when you speak to them, when you preach from a pulpit, even in Abbotsham Baptist Church. This is a story for us. There'll be people that you talk to, that you try and witness to, and they'll be sat there and they'll be like that seed that the bird came and took straight away and stole it away. And they'll be thinking, what a load of, it's soon be 1:30. We'll soon be able to have a cup of tea. And then we go home. What a load of nonsense. What a load of poppycock. This gospel message that is preached. I come along because it's my church. Yeah, of course I do. It's or I'm listening to somebody because it's polite. I don't like not to. But what are they talking about? This man Jesus, somebody who died 2,000 years ago. How can his dying forgive my sins? No, I don't. It's nonsense. It just doesn't make sense. And the word is stolen. That's what Jesus says. This isn't me being nasty to anybody. This is what Jesus... He said, I'm going to tell you the real meaning of the story. He said, there'll be people, as the farmer sows the seed, as you sow the word, some people will be like that seed on the path where the word is sown. As soon as they hear it, Satan comes and takes away the word, and the mind will be wandering. The word, you might as well be reading Baba Black Sheep, because the word, it has no relevance. They're thinking, I've started, so I'd better finish this. I hesitated. Did I turn my cooker on this morning? That did happen to me once in this church. Though I said that, and Simon Inch, the town mayor, can you remember Simon Inch? He got up and he went out. And then he did come back in at the end as well and told us. He said, I couldn't remember whether I'd turned the cooker on or not. But I'm just illustrating, our mind wanders and we think about what we're going to do tomorrow, what we're going to have for dinner, if it's going to be too hot. And I've prepared all this for dinner and it's too hot, and what am I going to wear, how am I going to keep cool, and our minds are wandering when the preacher's preaching his heart out, if you like, and the word is stolen. That's what Jesus says. Some people will hear the word, but they'll just hear an earthly story. They won't get the heavenly meaning, because Satan will come and take it away. Verses 16 and 17, it says the second area. He said, others, like the seed sown on rocky places, they hear the word, but straight away they receive it with joy. But since they have no root, they only last a short time. When difficulties come because of the word, they fall away very quickly. And we've seen that happen time and time and time again. We've seen young people. If I say young people, more often than not it's young people, but all ages. But we've seen particularly young people come along to church, and perhaps a young people's group got involved, even baptized. We've seen it happen, and then they go away to university. And it's tough. It's tough away when all their buddies are socializing and going out boozing, whatever, but because they've got no root, because they've got no depth, no grounding, very quickly they fall away. That's what Jesus says the heavenly meaning is. You've got to have a strong root, as it were. You've got to read your Bible. You've got to pray. You've got to fellowship. You've got to make sure that you don't just set off well, you continue well, and you finish well. Others, he says, verses 18 and 19, are like the thorns. What does he say? Verse 18 and 19, still others, like the seed sown among the thorns, they hear the word, but the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, the desires for other things come in and choke the word, making it unfruitful. Other things come in, the worries, the cares, the concerns, wealth, possessions, things that we worry about, our job, security, our family, our finances. So our spiritual life is strangled, really. And we don't grow. We don't grow. Verse 20 tells us about the successful. He says, others, like the seed sown on the good soil, they hear the word, they accept it, and they produce a crop, 30, 60, even 100-fold. Wouldn't it be grand if everyone who heard the word, received Christ? Wouldn't that be grand, eh? Everyone that you witness to. But of those who do, some hardly seem to grow at all. Just 30-fold, if you like. Others, their growth is amazing. It's 100-fold. A cursing, blaspheming drunkard becomes a mild-mannered, sober preacher. What a wonderful change in my life has been wrought since Jesus came into my life. Well, we know the story, but what's the application for us? The application for us is, in this earthly story with a heavenly meaning, what does it mean for us? What's our experience? Do we feel that the word has been stolen in our, yeah, we've been in church, we've heard the gospel message time and time again, but we've never responded. The word has been stolen, it's been taken, it's been snatched away. Or did we respond once, perhaps many years ago, but we didn't grow much because we never really prayed, we never really studied the Bible, there was no depth of commitment. Or did our experience, has it been strangled and stifled? Yes, we set off well, but we look back to former days, youthful days perhaps, and then the cares of this world came in and overtook us. Or are we growing for Christ? Are we fruitful as every day with Jesus becomes sweeter than the day before? Jesus began in verse 3, listen, he says, listen. Ears that hear, not just ears that don't hear, ears that listen, he says. And again in verse 9, he who has ears to hear, let him. In fact, 13 times in this chapter, he uses that word hear. I should have told you at the start of the sermon 13 times, then you could have looked through them all, couldn't you? Hear, hear, listen, listen, listen. Do you know that was good advice that Eli gave to young Samuel, wasn't it? Speak, Lord. Your servant is listening. I'm listening. I am listening, Lord, to thee. What hast thou to say to me? Well, we're going to sing another harvest song to conclude our ministry this Lord's Day morning, number 106. Come ye, come you thankful people. Come, raise the song of harvest home. Fruits and crops are gathered in safe before the storms begin. 106.